The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, chapter number 21, text number 8, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on April 21st, 2008, in Timișoara, Romania.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, chapter number 21, text number 8. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yate Shudre Taman Yoga,
Yate Shudre Taman Yoga,
Atiti Svabiravrita,
Atiti Svabiravrita,
Rajan Mediatam Manam,
Rajan Mediatam Manam,
Saganaya Bubukshate,
Saganaya Bubukshate.
When the Shudra went away, another guest arrived, surrounded by dogs, and said, O King, I and my company of dogs are very hungry. Please give us something to eat. There's no purpur. I'll read a few verses up to the next purpur. Sa adritya vishishtang yad buhumana purashkritam tascha datva namaschakre shvabhyasva patiye vibhu. With great respect, King Runtideva offered the balance of the food to the dogs and the master of the dogs who would come as guests. The king offered them all respects and obeisances. Paniya matram ucce shang tachchaika paritarpanam pashyata pulkasho bhyaghyad apodyeha shubhayame. Thereafter, only the drinking water remained, and there was only enough to satisfy one person. But when the king was just about to drink it, a chandala appeared and said, O king, although I am low-born, kindly give me some drinking water. Tashyatam karanam vacham nishamya vipulashramam kripaya brisha santapta idam ahamritam vacham. Aggrieved at hearing the pitiful words of the poor, fatigued chandala, Maharaj Runtidev spoke the following nectarian words. Sakamaye ham gatim ishvarat param astardi yuktam apunarbhavam va aratim prapadye kiladeha vajam antastito yena bhavant yadukaha. I do not pray to the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the eight perfections of mystic yoga, nor for salvation from repeated birth and death. I want only to stay among all the living entities and suffer all distresses on their behalf so that they may be freed from suffering. Purport. The first sentence here is the purport of the previous verse. Maharaj Runtidev's words were like amrita or nectar, and therefore, aside from rendering bodily service to an aggrieved person, by his words alone, the king could save the life of anyone who might hear him. Vasudev Dutta made a similar statement to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, requesting the Lord to liberate all living entities in his presence. Vasudev Dutta submitted that if they were unfit to be liberated, he himself would take all their sinful reactions and suffer personally so that the Lord might deliver them. A Vaishnav is therefore described as being paradukha dukhi, very much aggrieved with the sufferings of others. As such, a Vaishnava engages in activities for the real welfare of human society. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnava Namamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha. So, here we see a great Vaishnava, King Vanti Deva. Just see the service mode of this king. He'll sacrifice everything for others. As we will read in the next verse, actually, he was so thirsty. He was on the verge of death, actually. That he could not drink that water, he would die. That's how thirsty the king was. But yet, he was willing to give the water to this Chandala. So, this is the exemplary acts of a great Vaishnava king, Vanti Deva. So, there's a great lesson to be learned in this pastime of Vanti Deva for us, that we must be willing to sacrifice everything for the benefit of the fallen conditioned souls. This is known as the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for delivering all living entities from the cycle of birth and death. You may say, well, it sounds too austere for me, and you know, I'm sorry. I want to have some comforts. I'm really not ready to, you know, be a frontline soldier for Lord Chaitanya. It just sounds too heavy for me. Sorry. Maybe later. Not now. But I have an insider secret in this connection. What are you really looking for? What are you really hankering for in life? Do you want nectar? Do you want bliss? Is that what you really want, or do you just want, you want to have some material comforts? What's going to satisfy you more? It's like I can stay comfortably. We have one house in America. I can stay there comfortably, with my, you know, the manicured lawn and the whole thing, a typical American house. I could stay there comfortably in my home base, my ashram, without having to take all this trouble traveling here, traveling there, never knowing always what's going to be like when I go here, when I go there. So many uncertainties. Of course, you all make it so pleasant when I come. It's better than being at home, actually. But the point is, traveling, there are so many austerities in traveling that come up from time to time, and so many uncertainties. So, but I find it's actually more enlivening to be out here traveling and preaching all over the world for the sake of delivering the fallen conditioned souls than to sit comfortably in my ashram in America. So in the same way, if you take up this mood of doing whatever the needful is for pushing forward this movement, however you can best serve the mission of delivering the fallen conditioned souls with your talents and your abilities, you don't really have to worry, because Krishna guarantees that if you fully give yourself to me, I will personally provide all your comforts. See, really, that's, if you have a complete dedication to Krishna, he'll cover everything. A businessman wrote me the other day, and he wants to be a devotee, you see, but he also wants to be a successful businessman. He has his own business, a startup company, and he really wants to take it to the top. You see, he has this ambition to be successful materially. But he's afraid because he hears sometimes that Krishna takes away all the opulences of a devotee. He's thinking, well, what is this? You know? It's like bewildering his mind. So I explained to him, you see. And actually, Krishna does that for people who are torn between matter and spirit. From the one hand, you want to be a devotee. On the other hand, you want to enjoy the material world. Then Krishna will take away all your material opulence. So you have no choice but to take surrender, take shelter of Krishna. But if you're already in the mood of giving everything to Krishna, and you want to offer everything to him, including your material talents in his service, he won't take away your talents. He'll give you more talent. So I told him, and actually it's confirmed by Prabhupada. I can't find the purport. I looked for it again. The Prabhupada says that a Krishna conscious businessman can aspire to become the wealthiest businessman in the whole world. So I told him, I said, don't worry. Just be fully surrendered to Krishna. And, you know, so you can hanker and strive to become the wealthiest businessman in the world. Offering that, the fruit of that, to Krishna. So we really don't have to worry about, you know, completely dedicating ourselves to Krishna. The only time it's a problem is when we're mixed. You say we're going back and forth, back and forth. That's when Krishna has to yank the material comforts away from us, put us in material distress. You see? But if you realize that actually everything belongs to Krishna, the whole world is his energy, and everything should be used for his service. Then he'll give you more. Look at Prabhupada. How much facility he got? From 40 rupees to millions of dollars, you see, in 11 years. Even from a material point of view, they call it a rags to riches story, you see. Prabhupada went from such an austere situation to be such a great opulent situation. Why? Because he was even to the point of getting the Fisher Mansion in Detroit with gold bathtub knobs. Real gold on the knobs on the bathtub. Gold! I mean, that's how what opulence Prabhupada went to. Within just a few years, to having gold, even richer, even more opulent than the average rich, than the richest men in North America. He had gold, solid gold bathtub knob. You see? Of course, he wasn't interested in that. But it was there. It's not that he said, oh, now I have this gold plated. It wasn't plated, it was gold. I don't know how gold it was. But I can't say, but it was very, very opulent mansion. But you know, now I'll just stay here, I won't go anywhere. I'll just stay here and enjoy this opulence. No. He continued traveling and preaching. Even at the Vrindavan, when he was dying and his body was a complete skeleton, he went traveling and preaching. He went out traveling and preaching to the UK. He was planning to go from there on to the US, actually. But it was just so bad that he had to go back because his death was imminent. So the point is that we have nothing to lose and everything to gain, even materially, by putting ourselves fully into this mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for the deliverance of the fallen conditioned souls. That however best I can serve the mission. This was a nice point one of my godbrothers made. He was giving a seminar on the nectar devotion in Vrindavan. And I noted this one point in his seminar. That this is the mood of how you should approach your spiritual master. You should simply pray to him, my dear Guru Maharaj, please bless me that I can please use me in whatever way I can best serve your mission. You see? If you're wondering, should I do this, should I do that, should I do this, should I do that? Then this is the easy formula. You see, it's a very simple thing. However I can best serve your mission. You just submit yourself fully to the spiritual master in that mood of how I can best serve your mission. And then that's pure bhakti, you see. Not just theoretically, but that's pure bhakti in practice. Something you can be It's a way that you can be in pure bhakti 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That, my dear Guru Maharaj, I'm willing to do whatever you say. You just tell me how I can best serve your mission. It's such a simple thing. And that means that you're fully absorbed in acting for the welfare of all living entities. And as I described last night, as soon as one thinks like that how can I act for the benefit of all living entities? Well, guess what? You're also living entities. So automatically you're benefited by that. When the hand thinks, let me serve the stomach, does the hand now starve? No. The hand also receives its nourishment. You're not left out. That's the point. When you give everything for the mission of the spiritual master, to save the fallen souls, then you are not left out. When you give all the food to the stomach, you're not left out. But if you think, well, I will keep the food here and digest it like this, can you do that? Not possible, is it? You will not get any nourishment. You take the bakura, you know, you say, well, I'm going to enjoy the bakura like this. I don't want to feed it to the stomach. Actually, there's an example given in the Vedas. You know. And the parts of the body, they didn't like this. That stomach, that lazy stomach, is just sitting there enjoying all day. It doesn't do any work. We're doing all the work. The leg is walking out to the field, the hand is picking the crop, you know, some. The eyes, the ears, so all the senses were engaged in making an arrangement for the stomach to eat. They said, this isn't fair. So they formed a union. And they called a strike. Don't feed the stomach. Don't feed the stomach. The stomach is a capitalist pig. Don't feed the stomach. Don't feed the stomach. They were going on chanting their slogans, marching up and down with great energy and enthusiasm. The first day of the strike. But the second day of the strike, somehow they were losing their energy. Don't feed the stomach, don't feed the stomach. The stomach is a capitalist pig, don't feed the stomach. But the third day, it was getting really heavy. Don't feed the stomach. They were laying down, they had no energy to get up and march. They were just laying there, mumbling their mantra. Don't feed the stomach, don't feed the stomach. The stomach is a capitalist pig, don't feed the stomach. And with their last little bit of energy left, they said, you know, I think we better call another meeting of the union. I think we better call off the strike. We can't carry on. So, it's like that, you see. We are going on strike against God. That I will enjoy separately. But the bottom line is we lose our energy, just like this whole civilization. It's going on strike against God. You know, we don't need God anymore. If we go to Him, we'll just ask Him for some material thing. We don't need to serve Him in pure bhakti. That's the material society. So what's happening? It's literally losing its energy. It's running out of petroleum now. You see? The whole thing is running on petroleum. And petroleum is, you know, it's tripled in price. I guess it's tripled here too. In the US, it's tripled. It's gone to triple to what it was. Triple price. So a whole society is running on petroleum. Even what we eat is brought in by trucks and airplanes running on petroleum. So the whole thing is running on petroleum. It's an artificial... So they're, because they're on strike against the pure bhakti, they're losing their energy. The whole civilization is losing its energy. So therefore, just as the parts of the body had a meeting and decided to serve the stomach, it's time for the leaders of the world to get together in consultation with the followers of Srila Prabhupada and decide it's time that we again base the human civilization on the achievement of pure bhakti. The whole society should be based on that. The whole human life and the whole world civilization should be based on the principle of achieving pure bhakti. And if they do that, then actually they'll have, all the energy problems will be solved. Krishna will give them a way to get the energy they need to do what they need to do. See, Bhumi is controlling everything. Just like a father. When the child misuses his allowance, what does he do? He cuts back on the allowance. Instead of giving him a dollar, he gives him a nickel. 5 cents. When I was a boy, of course, a nickel is worth a lot more than that. That was my weekly allowance. I got 5 cents every week. That was my big allowance. Now, if I'd abused that allowance, my father would have given me 1 penny instead. But he didn't feel I was abusing my allowance, so he continued giving me my 5 cents every week. So, right now, God is giving us allowance. He's giving us facility for material enjoyment. And what are we using it for? To deny Him. To simply gratify our senses. So therefore, He's cutting back. All right. I cut back on the petroleum. I cut back on the clean water. I cut back on the clean air. You see, I cut back on the food. Actually, it's not Him directly, but Mother Bhumi is doing that. Because she's so disturbed to see how they are misusing her resources that she's providing them. So all we have to do is remember the reign of Maharaj Prithu. Everything was going on so nicely because the king was in the mood of pure bhakti and the whole society was being pointed in the direction of pure bhakti. So that's what we have to do here. We have to steer ourselves individually to pure bhakti. Do you understand? We have to steer ourselves to pure bhakti and at the same time steer the priests, pure bhakti to the leaders of the world and the society in general. That's our duty, our mission. And if we can establish this pure bhakti as the guiding principle of our lives very solidly and can therefore by our own example and by our words inspire others more and more to take up pure bhakti, then indeed all the world problems will be solved. And we can have another Sakshi Yuga in the middle of Kali Yuga. There's actually predicted a 10,000 year Sakshi Yuga within Kali Yuga. Sat Janna Durjana Pangu Jadda Andaghana Prema Vanyaya Dubaila Jagatada Jana. This Krishna Ganga's movement is a Prem Tsunami. And it will inundate the entire world. These are the words of Krishna Das Kaviraj this one. And it will inundate the entire world, drowning everyone. It doesn't matter if they are sadhjana, pious, durjana, impious, if they are lame, invalid, or blind. Andha, jabda, andha, ghana. It doesn't matter what is their position. Everyone will become drowned by this praying tsunami, this tidal wave of love of God. So it will happen. It will happen sometime within history. Now, how soon it happens, that's up to us. How much are we willing to sacrifice everything for making this movement a success? And that's the question. And as I pointed out, don't feel that will put you in difficulty. Actually, it will put you in a more ecstatic situation where Krishna is personally providing everything you need. See, right now I'm depending on some job that I work, my boss has to pay me, and I'm depending on some economic system where I can take that money, can I trade it in, I'm depending on somebody else to stock the grocery store, you see. I'm depending on so many arrangements to get my material necessities met. But if I'm fully surrendered to Krishna, ananyas chintayam tomam yejana paryapasate, tesham nichapayuktanam yogachemam vahamyam. If I'm directly surrendered to Krishna, fully, completely, totally, Krishna will personally deliver everything I need. Personally give me whatever I need, material and spiritual. Everything will be provided by Krishna. Prabhupada in one lecture, he says, Krishna will deliver to your home. Home delivery service. See, whatever you need. You don't have to even go out and get it. Krishna will deliver it right to your door, come right to your door and deliver it to your home. Whatever you need. Your food, your clothing, your shelter, your everything. So we really need to, be intelligent and stop, beating our head against the wall by trying to be Krishna conscious and at the same time try to enjoy this material world. We really have to stop torturing ourselves with this schizophrenic sort of lifestyle. You see. We need to get down to this pure bhakti. And as soon as we do that, we'll be absolutely amazed. I knew Krishna consciousness was good. That's why I took it up. But I had no idea it was this good. I had no idea. I knew it was ecstatic. But I had no idea it could be this ecstatic. And then after experiencing that sort of ecstasy, that it completely amazes you, beyond your wildest dreams, then it gets even better. And you go, wow, this is unbelievable. This is incredulous. How it can go on expanding like this more and more and more and more. But that is a statement of description. Isn't it? Bhama saukyam. That happiness which goes on increasing unlimitedly forever. Where can you get that by material comfort? Not possible. You can't get that from material comfort. So therefore, there is no more comfortable position than to be fully sold out to acting for the benefit of all others, just as this great Vaishnava king, Vanti Deva, has shown by his sterling example given here in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I can ask now if there's any questions. Everyone's ready now to give everything for Lord Chaitanya's movement. Full surrender, no holding back. Everyone's very eager to dive into the ocean of unlimited nectar. Or you'd rather sit comfortably on the bank and maybe, dip your toes in it. Which is it? On the bank or in the water? Which is it? Hmm? What do you think? You want to stay on the bank or you want to jump in the water?
Jump in the water.
Huh? Yeah. You want to jump in the water? Oh, very good.
I have a question.
Huh?
You mentioned that, I know you said you mentioned again and again, that if we go around saving the world, then our Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. But if we have a difficulty in chanting our rounds and difficulty in practicing our sadhana properly, then how, just going out and preaching, how would it help us?
All right. So, Vishnupriya Manaji has made one and inquired that if you put all your energy into saving others, then how will you be saved? You may neglect your rounds in the name of preaching, etc., etc., etc. There's a nice example to be understood in this connection. Of course, Prabhupada did say there's nothing more important than saving the world. But saving yourself is even more important. So, Prabhupada never wanted us to neglect our own Krishna consciousness for the sake of preaching, that's a thing. But there's a very nice example given in this connection. Just like a doctor who goes to an epidemic area sacrificing for the benefit of the epidemic victim, you see. So what does he do though before he goes out to treat everyone? He has special soap because he knows if I catch this disease then I can't treat the patients anymore. So he takes all precaution with special soap and special gloves and everything to keep himself from getting sick, keep himself pure. So in that way, the devotee, he has very good sadhana. He makes sure that his Krishna consciousness is very solid. Good sadhana, good studying. He takes care of his own Krishna consciousness. It's his first business. Because he understands, even though I have this duty to deliver to all others, I have to be delivered first. Apaniya Pachari Prabhuji Vari Sikaya. One must first practice himself perfectly and then preach. So if I am fixed properly in Krishna consciousness, I'm chanting good round, I'm rising early in the morning, taking advantage of the auspicious Brahma Muhurta hour, I'm keeping my body clean, I'm living, keeping my myself neat and clean, a good Brahman. These things are very conducive and necessary if one is going to be effective in preaching. So if one thinks, well, I got to save the world, and he just goes out there, he doesn't chant his rounds, doesn't eat properly, he overeats, he undereats, you know, he won't be very effective. He has to take care of his own personal situation and make sure that it's very nicely, he's very nicely situated in his chanting, the prasad, his living situation has to be very nicely arranged. So that's conducive, it's very brahminical, you see. He just goes into some passionate thing of saving the world and he neglects his own sadhana, then he won't be effective. He won't save himself. He can't save anyone else. He won't be able to save himself also. We have many people in our movement who are big, big preachers who distributed so many books. They did started big, big projects. Where are they now? They're gone. So that means they were serving in a passionate way, which was, it brought nice results, but because they remain in a passionate, the passion degrades into ignorance gradually. So one has to really, you have to, instead of being going out in a passionate way and doing service, you have to keep that passion, which is good, but engage it in a sattvic way, with a sattvic understanding. So you move towards śuddha-sattva. If it's just, I'm just passionately trying to preach and spread the movement, and I try to become more and more passionate in the way I do it, and I gradually degrade into ignorance. But you have to utilize that passion in a sattvic way, so that it purifies into pure goodness, and you become a pure devotee. Otherwise, you just go into tamaguna and become a karmi. There was one devotee, he had big success in Europe, a big leader here. I won't mention his name, but probably know who I'm talking about. He was a huge leader in Europe. So many disciples he made, had so many projects of books translated. Now, the last report I heard, he's in a lateral fold. He won't even say Hare Krishna. You say Hare Krishna, don't you even say that? You won't even say Hare Bol. So, you know, we really have to, the passion is good, but you has to be sattvicized, so it becomes purified in a pure goodness. So our enthusiasm to deliver the fallen souls has to be done strictly according to the guidelines of the acharyas, not according to my own egoistic ideas that I'm great preacher. In fact, this is very nicely summarized by Srila Prabhupada in the Nectar of Devotion. It's Rupa Goswami, actually. Rupa Goswami says, I'm simply trying to spread this Krishna consciousness movement all over the world, although I am most unqualified to do so. So if you take out the second half, that's just rajasic, you see. But if you add the second half, that brings you to the, that introduces a sattvic understanding, a scriptural understanding of actually who am I? I'm totally unqualified to preach. What is my qualification? To help to save anyone. I'm just a struggling soul, you see. This sort of humility has to be developed. One has to preach. Many book distributor devotees, they have reported from their own experience of the book distribution. As soon as they think I'm a great book distributor, they can't distribute any books. Nobody, in fact, everybody spits in their face. They don't want to hear from them. But when they humbly feel that I'm totally unfit, I'm totally unqualified, I simply have to act as an instrument of my spiritual master and the previous acharyas, then they can distribute books like anything. So it's a matter of having the proper, so one has to cultivate the proper humility when one is preaching, that's a fact. Otherwise one will fall down in due course. And one's results will dry up in due course also. So the humility, developing, the humility means cultivate your own sadhana. You must cultivate your own sadhana very nicely. Any other questions? Yes.
How can we make the difference between the Christian sects and the fact that now in ISKCON we have the same problem, so many...
What is the problem that we have?
Sects are derived from ISKCON. Right?
Oh, people breaking us?
Yes. They're separated from...
Yes, in Christianity we see there's so many sects. There's the Roman Catholic Church, the Greek Orthodox Church, then the Lutherans split off, and then the Presbyterians and the Baptists, and then the Southern Baptists split off from the Northern Baptists, and it just goes on subdividing. There's thousands of Christian sects out there now. Thousands and thousands and thousands of them. The Mormons are there, and there's the split off from the Mormons. It just goes on and on and on. So how do we keep ISKCON from becoming split off? How do we stop the split off from happening? Is that what you're asking?
I'm asking that this is already happening. This
will it go on happening?
It's already happening.
Huh?
It's already happening.
Yeah, so what's the question?
How can we not be bewildered by that?
Kind
of confused ISKCON.
My godbrother Brahmatirtha, he's the famous Brahmatirtha from Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers. He always had a very cool way of talking about things in a very poetic, witty manner. He said, actually, that's the sign of a very successful religious movement. And it has a split-off organization. It means you're really big now, you see. If you're a little tiny, insignificant movement, there's nothing to split off from. And when you become a huge, powerful movement, they will naturally be split up. So actually, it's a sign of our success that we have split up. Instead of being bewildered by it, you can think, well, that's just the way it goes throughout history. Any big, powerful, just like the Muslim movement is a powerful movement, it is the Shiites and the Sunnis, you see. Any big, big, powerful spiritual movement in history has always had split up. So it means ISKCON is now emerging as a big, big, powerful spiritual movement in the history. So in a way, we should feel flattered that we have split up. Yes, ISKCON is a really big time now because we have our split offs. And it's kind of funny. I mean, just like the Ritviks are there, the IRM people. And they make so much, propaganda against the ISKCON gurus. But you know what Prabhupada said? He said, if you want to hate Krishna. In Germany, the government and the whole German people turned against our movement like anything. Every newspaper was saying the Hare Krishna movement is very bad. It was horrible. But Prabhupada said, because they are saying Krishna, therefore we are still existing. So the point is that even bad propaganda makes you a celebrity. And then after a while people realize that, you become famous by bad propaganda, you become famous. So I'm seeing that this Back to Prabhupada magazine, I don't know if you've seen it, it's full of blasphemy. That they every month they come out with articles on this guru is bad, and this guru is bad, and this guru is bad, and this guru, they have pictures of the ISKCON gurus, and they talk about how bad they are. But actually, indirectly, they're making the ISKCON gurus bigger celebrities, more famous. So I was happy when I heard that they covered me also. That means I'm becoming a big guru now. Because they also had an article on me. I heard recently they have an article on me. So in some ways, it's actually helping our movement. Because they're making all this propaganda, and they're simply drawing more and more attention to the gurus in our movement. So in one way, it doesn't bother me so much. And in another way, that's one way of looking at it. Another way is that they're helping the gurus to stay on their toes. Because if they're always finding fault, this guru said, they're just watching every guru, can we catch him saying something wrong or doing something wrong? Now the gurus have to be more careful to be pure in all of their activities. So in that way, it's also good. If you have somebody who's going to write an article on you, this guru, he smiles too much at women, or something like that, then you got to be careful, because if you have people out there, if you do one little thing that's questionable, you see, then they're going to write a big article about you. Oh, he's bogus, So in that way, they're actually serving our mission, helping us, these split-off people. So there are many ways of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is this. Srila Prabhupada said that amongst Vaishnavas, sometimes there is a difference of opinion. He said, but that difference of opinion is spiritual, because they're both agreeing to serve Krishna. Here are all these people saying, yes, we should serve Prabhupada. We're all agreeing we should serve Prabhupada. Some people say we should serve him in this way, and some people say we should serve him in that way. So we can be worried about the difference and the conflict, or we could say, wow, here's all these people who want to serve Prabhupada. Isn't this a wonderful thing? It's like the IRM people, they're growing, they're attracting more members, and they all want to serve Prabhupada. They sing the same Guru Puja song that we do. Even though they're a different sect, still they're promoting. And you know what we've seen? We see that people that they recruit then end up coming over and joining us. We've had that experience in Austin, isn't it? One of our members, he had gone to their thing in Bangalore, and then he came to us. So you'd be amazed actually how Krishna can use them to help us. Because we are the actual Viliskans, established by Prabhupada. They are the ones who split off. They say that we are not bona fide, and they are bona fide. But actually that's not true, because we are the ones who are obeying Srila Prabhupada. The best thing to do if you're bewildered by it is you write down, because maybe you heard some of their arguments on it. All you have to do is write their arguments down, and I can defeat every one of their arguments. I can smash it totally into the ground and pulverize it. What's one of their arguments you heard?
No, I just heard about the spiritual masters in ISKCON.
They say the spiritual masters are not bona fide. Okay. They say that only Prabhupada can be the guru and nobody else, because obviously, no one is on the level of Prabhupada, and only somebody who's on the level of Prabhupada can be a spiritual master. It may sound very nice, but it's not what Prabhupada said. He told us, I can give you even a copy of the lecture in the Veda base. I can give you a transcript of the exact words of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. I can email it to you. He told us in Mayapur, this was during the festival, when all the devotees came from all over the world, all the leaders were there, and many of the rank and file devotees were there for a huge Mayapur festival. And Prabhupada told he said that now we are 10,000. And then we will grow to 100,000. And then we will grow to 1,000,000. And then we will grow to 10,000,000. He said there will be no scarcity of acharyas. So Prabhupada's vision was there should be 10,000,000 acharyas for ISKCON. So these Vitvik people, IRM people, they say, only one acharya. But that's not Prabhupada's instruction. He said there should be 10,000,000 acharyas. And in that same lecture he said that during the physical, when one's spirit, even if one is qualified to act as acharya, one should not do so when his spiritual master is present on this planet. But he said after the departure of one's guru, physically departing from this realm, he said, if one is qualified, it is better to act as acharya. It is better to do that than it is not to do that. In other words, Prabhupada is telling us, you should do that if you are qualified. So the Vitviks say, but there's no one qualified. But what's the qualification? Do we have to speculate what the qualification is? No. It's stated directly in the Upadeshamrita. You know that book, Nectar of Instruction? The first verse gives the qualification for making disciples all over the world. Vacha vegam, manasakrada vegam, jiva vegam, mudaropasta vegam. Etan vetan yo vishahet dira sarvam api mam pratigam shishya. You've read that verse? One who can conquer the mind, words, and anger, tongue, belly, and genitals, is qualified to make disciples all over the world. All over the world, he can make disciples. So, one, and then Prabhupada describes in his purport what that means to conquer these senses. It's a huge, long purport. In full detail, he describes what it means to conquer these senses. We can discuss it briefly here. Mind, words, okay, the mind should always be thinking of Krishna, that's the first thing. The word should only be spoken to glorify Krishna and to push for this movement. And anger should be utilized only to chastise the demons and to chastise those, the, you know, of course, when disciples make mistakes, and we can also use some anger to whip you into line, you see. In a loving way, of course, you know. So mind, words, and anger. If they're fully used in Krishna's service, they're not used for any exploitation, for any greedy purpose, or any lusty purpose, you see. Then that is proper utilizing mind, words, and anger in the service of Krishna. And then tongue, belly, and genitals. Well, that's very simple. I only take Krishna Prasad. You see? And if I only, my tongue only gets Krishna Prasad, then the belly will only get Krishna Prasad also. Because everything that goes to the belly, it has to pass through the tongue. And as far as the genitals go, well, I should only use my genitals for making Krishna conscious children, that's all. So if I'm not a married man, that means I'm strictly celibate. You see, if I'm vanaprastha, I'm strictly celibate. I'm sannyasi, I'm strictly celibate. If I'm a married man, then I only have sex if I want to make my wife pregnant. That's all. Other than that, I completely celibate. So in this way, if one brings these six pushing agents, mind, words, anger, tongue, belly, and genitals, under the control of Krishna consciousness, you see, then that person is qualified to be an acharya. So you have to see, well, I've seen some of the ISKCON gurus, and do they actually do that? Is their mind being... Do I see that they're always Krishna conscious? They're always thinking about Krishna, talking about Krishna, serving Krishna. You can study the gurus. Just like you're seeing me, you see. You can see, well, is Sankarshan Prabhu always engaged in Krishna consciousness? Is he talking about Krishna? Does he get angry over his own sense gratification? Or is he only uses anger in Krishna's service? You can study me and see, well, is he really qualified? Does he eat non-offered food? Does he go out to some karmi restaurant to enjoy Mexican food? You see, you can study my qualities and characteristics and see tongue, belly, and genitals. So you can, you just have to study the gurus and see, do they meet up to these standards? They meet up these qualifications. And then you can make your own judgment. You don't have to take somebody's word for it. You should make your own judgment. Is this person qualified to be a spiritual master or not? That you have to decide your own, based on the Shastra. The GBC does not certify somebody as a guru. They only say, we have no objection if this person acts as a spiritual master. And then let the disciples decide if he really is one or not. Let the devotees decide if he really is one or not. We have no objection if he preaches as a spiritual master. But we don't certify that he is one. That's the actual official thing that GBC does. You're the one who has to decide, based on the scripture, is this person a bona fide spiritual master or not? Responsibility is on your shoulders, you see. Is this person a bona fide guru or not? Does he live up to the descriptions given in the revealed scriptures? So the Ritvik people, they just, without even knowing who all the gurus are, actually even studying their qualities and characteristics, they make this blanket statement. Well, because some of them fell down, they're obviously none of them are bona fide. I mean, that's ridiculous. Because some of the gurus fell down, therefore they're all bogus. When I went to India one time, well, actually, you know, I go once a year, but on the way out, I always cash in my rupees at the airport. Because your rupees are no good outside of India. So one year I had a few 500s rupee notes. Of course, it's not worth much here. 500 rupees is maybe $10 or something. not much money, but I had some 500 rupee notes, and I handed them in, and he gave me US dollars, and he gave me one of the rupee notes back. He said, "This one's counterfeit." Does that mean I'm not going to go to India anymore? Because I got a counterfeit note? So because some of the gurus turned out to be counterfeit, they didn't really pan out to be gurus in the long run. They didn't live up to the scriptural description. That means I reject all of them? Because some of them are counterfeit, they're all counterfeit? Because some Romanian notes are counterfeit, therefore I won't deal with the Romanian currency anymore? There's some counterfeit money here in Romania, right? But yet you're dealing Romanian money every day. Why are you doing that? If some of the money is counterfeit, why don't you give up Romanian money altogether? So the Ritvik people, the IRM people, some of the ISKCON gurus were counterfeit. Therefore, don't deal with ISKCON gurus. Totally walk away from them. So will you be walk away from Romanian money because some of the Romanian money was counterfeit? It requires a little brain to understand these things. A brainless person will think, yeah, some ISKCON, some of them fell down, so they're all bad. I mean, it's stupid. Even in the Vedas we read that some of the gurus fell down. Even in the Bhagavatam, the guru of Bali Maharaj, he turned out to be bogus. Shukracharya. He was rejected by his disciples. So just because some of the ISKCON gurus turned out not to be really qualified to be gurus, that doesn't mean that none of them are qualified. You understand? So when you read if you come across these criticisms of ISKCON gurus, you should understand these people have a political agenda. They actually have a political agenda. They are the leaders of this IRM movement. They are trying to establish themselves as the acharya. That's what they're really trying to do. In fact, their head pundit, his name is Krishnakant Desai. He grew up as a member of our youth forum at the Bhaktivedanta Manor. He was an Indian kid attending our programs at Bhaktivedanta Manor. This person, and here in Romania, do you call your parents by their first name or you call them mother and father?
Mother.
Yes. In America also, and in India also, it's even more strict principle. This boy grew up in a Gujarati family, and whereas you always call your parents by mother and father, you never call them by their first name, but he insisted on calling them by their first name because he didn't want any authority over him. This is the person who's the head of this Vedic movement. His disease is he never wanted to be under anybody. So he's created a whole, he has a clever brain like a lawyer. Through word jugglery, just like Shankaracharya is word jugglery. He's just trying to establish that only Prabhupada is a guru, and what he's really doing is he's not accepting anyone as a guru. He's trying to present himself as a bigger guru than Prabhupada by trying to rewrite Prabhupada's teaching to suit him. He's trying to establish himself as being on a higher level than even Prabhupada. And so we have to understand the cheating that they're doing. And then you won't be misled by it. Then you'll just be amazed at how powerful is the material nature.
Don't they have the same Bhagavad Gita and the same purpose? They do have the same Bhagavad Gita, for example.
Yes.
The same purpose. So they misinterpret it.
Why? They don't properly understand it. Bhagavad Gita says to approach the spiritual master, inquire from him and render service. That means he has to be living on this planet. How do you approach someone who's not here? You approach the guru, that means you go to him, he's sitting somewhere and his porter is on the Vyasa. Somewhere you approach him and say, "Guru Maharaj, is there any service for me? Can I do some service for you?" So how do you do that when he's departed? You don't have that facility when he's departed. So, if they would just read the Bhagavad Gita that they are distributing, they would carefully read it instead of seeing everything through their own political motives, then they would get the proper understanding. But they're not even reading their own Bhagavad Gita, they're distributing properly. They're not reading it properly. How do you approach the spiritual master who's not there? They're
approach the book.
Not even there.
Approach the book. Because it's Swami.
But Prabhupada, an Indian lady asked him in London, Srila Prabhupada, or Swamiji, can you take a guru simply by reading the books? Prabhupada said, no. He said, don't take a guru in the air, you must make a guru concrete. He made it very clear. Don't take a guru in the air. You must make a guru concrete. So, if you could have a guru in the air, you didn't require a physical presence, and what's the need of a disciplic succession? We could all just be Krishna's devotees like Arjuna. What's the need of a disciplic succession? We could all just be Krishna's devotees. If they say it's not necessary to have a living guru that's physically present, then there's no need for a whole disciplic succession. We could all be Krishna's disciples like Arjuna. You understand? Why does Krishna say it comes down in the siddhic succession? Because you need to have a guru right there that you can see him, and he can see you, and he can give you personal guidance. This should be your service. Reading Prabhupada's books, you're not going to get any personal instructions. If you have a living spiritual master, you say, well, it's good, you should keep your job. And you should be Krishna conscious while you work that job for the time being. That's just an example. Prabhupada gave us personal instructions when he was here. I would write him a letter and he would give me personal instructions. So you don't have that facility to write Prabhupada a letter and get personal instructions. It's not all one. When the spiritual master is departed, you cannot get personal instructions unless you're a highly liberated soul who can directly communicate with him within your heart. But who's on that level? We're not on that level. So therefore, you require a guru who is physically manifested here who can tell you exactly what your service should be, what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong. You need to have someone who can do that for you. You're not so pure, you can hear Krishna from within your heart telling you you're doing this right, you're doing that wrong. You're not that pure. You need to have a living spiritual master who can make it very clear to you. This is right, this is wrong. Do this, don't do that. Firm, solid, no uncertainty, no haziness. That's required. That's why these Ritvik people, they're killing Krishna consciousness. What they're doing is poison, actually. If it's not wiped out, it will destroy this Krishna consciousness movement. There'll be no disciplic succession. It'll just be all speculation. Well, I think Prabhupada wants me to do this. And I think Prabhupada wants me to do that. You don't know what Prabhupada wants you to do. Person, you don't know. Therefore, you require the direction of a living representative of Srila Prabhupada who tells you exactly what you need to do. Here locally, you have your temple president, Radhe Krishna. He is Prabhupada's representative. So he is a Siksha Guru. You act under his direction. And then in due course, when you're fully fixed and serious, then you can take a Diksha Guru from one of our spiritual masters in our society. You see. So by accepting the representative, the local Siksha Guru, and the Diksha Guru also, then you can become solidly fixed in doing exactly what Prabhupada wants you to do. I was serving at a distance from Srila Prabhupada. So I asked him a letter, I wrote him and asked him what to do. He said, work under the temple president's direction. Do whatever the temple president said. So you have a temple president here. He's a living representative of the disciplic succession. You can work with him. Take guidance from him. And you have you contacted me also. You can take guidance from me. He and I are working together, see, as a team, to take you out of this ocean of breath. Isn't that a fact? We're a team. And we're not working against each other. We're working with each other as a team. He's Siksha Guru, I'm Diksha Guru. So take advantage of these living representatives of the disciplic succession that Krishna has given you. Make your life perfect. Don't follow this mythic philosophy that only Prabhupada is the authority. Because you have no way to get confirmation from him if you're doing something right or wrong. You don't have the means of doing that. You have to get your feedback from a living representative because your senses are on the gross plane right now. They're not on the spiritual plane. Your senses are right now on this gross plane. That's what you can perceive, and that's all you can perceive. So you need to get your direction here on the growth plane. The prophet is here in the room right now, but he's on a very subtle plane that you can't perceive right now. So you require someone who's connected with Srila Prabhupada, who can connect you with Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharya. Does that make it very, very clear? Okay. So, any other points, questions? Alright, I'll stop here. Gantarab Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai,
Shri Shankarsham Prabhu Ki Jai,
Jaskan Timishwara Devotees Ki Jai.